right. Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. We have one of our hosts here. At this point, it's not even co-host. It's just me. Chester is the editor of this podcast, and I am like the guy who talks to the people on the show. He's abandoned the show for the entire month of August. I don't think we've done any real maybe one or two ever podcasts apart before. I don't know why Chester needs to spend time with his family and at his job, but he's completely ignoring you guys, what would the listeners be called? Like the fanatics or something. At this point, it's just me. I'll send him this. I want to mess up as many times as possible, ideally on this podcast, so he can at least get some busy work editing, because usually I just send him a perfect file. Like, everything we said was great. It was correct. It was 35 minutes, and you don't even have to edit it. Just put, people should also know, when I pick a song, it's a good one, and then when I don't send him, which I haven't been recently, if you see a lame song at the end of this podcast, it's Chester picking it.
Well, if it's before 1990, you know it's definitely
I didn't introduce you yet. Why are you talking? Yeah, it's from the 90s, it's probably Chester. Anyway, let me introduce my guest. He's been on this podcast at least once before. New York Giants fan, Stan, Yoni Wiesel.
Hey, what's going
on? How you doing, Yoni?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
People should hear how bad you sounded 2 minutes ago. I thought we were going to do this podcast and we were going to bury it at the end of another show because your audio was truly under the sea. And now you sound totally good, and I think this is going to work.
Yeah, that's probably a microcosm of my life. I hope it stays that way.
Wait, so the microcosm of your life is people think you're bad, and then they get a second chance and you're good.
I want to say something like that.
Complimenting yourself.
I really don't make a good first impression. The first time I was on your podcast, actually, back in the day, back in the Ari Gold days.
The Ari Gold days.
Yeah, I think you literally edited out. You literally edited out half my podcast. I made some crazy off-color comparison between.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what.
It was a different time. It was a different time.
Exactly.
Everyone's much more woke now. No one even knew what woke was then.
That's a fact. Well, you guys knew it. You guys were woke enough to know to cut. You needed to cut out half of my thing from back
then. I was born woke, but a lot of these people were new to the game.
Right. But either way, I'm happy to be back and happy to talk about a team that's probably controversial, I'd guess, from everything I've seen to this point.
Controversial. I don't know if they're – I don't even know what people think about the Giants. I feel like they're not – other than people are excited for Saquon, I don't know what the sort of national conversation is about the Giants because they're not really getting a lot of buzz one way or the other right now.
Well, I've heard you say that you think more highly of them than you would expect other people do, so – I figured that was, I may come in on the other end of that. So that's part of why I assumed it was controversial.
Okay. I mean, all right. So let me take you back to the draft, and let's start there.
Yeah,
I want to go back to the McAdoo days.
Actually,
but I want to hear your opinion on Saquon Barkley and everything that went down.
Right. So actually, you probably need to go back to the beginning of free agency to really get this.
Oh, okay.
And the Giants made a very Giants decision on the first day of free agency, which you used to think that Jerry Reese was the one making these awful free agency decisions, right when they start going out and loading up on JT Thomas and that returner who used to be on the Cowboys, whose name slipped my mind just now, going out the first day of free agency and getting, minimum guys for $3 million in a year and $10 million guaranteed. So the hope was we were past that. And then Gettleman comes in and he basically does the same thing by going out and signing Jonathan Stewart for a contract that made no sense to anybody at the time. Comments have come out since that somehow they think that he's rejuvenated somehow on some level. I don't know, but they think he still can be his old self, which again, his old self was never even that good, but somehow in 10 years into his career, they think that he's going to be worth, $3+ million a year. So that's really the first thing that you need to know when talking about the draft pick and how awful it truly was. But so that was the first thing. And they also brought in Shurmur instead of McAdoo. And when they chose Shurmur as opposed to some of the other options that were out there, whether it was the guy who ended up with the Lions from Patricia or some of the other more defensive-minded people, My thought was, well, obviously they're going to bring in a QB guru or someone who's considered that, and then they're going to draft the quarterback, because why else would you bring in, you know, a Pat Shurmur if you're not going to give him his guy so that he can develop his guy? So all that is leading up to the night of the draft. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, there's no way they're going to be stupid enough to actually spend the second overall pick on a running back. And as everyone knows at this point, of course, that is what they did. In my mind, they had a number of different options at that point. They either could have, you know, traded down if they knew that they weren't going to take a quarterback. If that's what they're in fact saying, is that there wasn't a quarterback worthy of that pick in this draft, then okay, trade down a lot. They didn't have to trade down too far. They probably could have gone down to 5 to 6, you know, just get something. But without doing that, and you know, ultimately taking a running back, it's a pretty, I don't know, as you can tell by my comments at this point, it's quite puzzling.
Yeah, I mean, of course, as a Jets fan with the third pick, I'm sitting there rooting for you to pick anyone, you know, my dream would have been Josh Allen, but pick your running back to give us a choice between the QBs. I wanted Darnold at 3. I think I probably would have preferred Mayfield over Darnold if given the choice, but I'm happy with Darnold. But my main goal as a Jets fan was not to pick Josh Allen. So if the Giants had done that, that would have been a delight. I would have much rather, even though I was like leading on this podcast, like the anti-Saquon brigade, like I would have much rather picked Saquon than Josh Allen, because Saquon Barkley's probably a very good running back. Yes, he's a running back, and that's an insane value, but like at least he's not a quarterback who stinks like Josh Allen.
Right, right. And personally, I didn't even want Darnold. I was on the Josh Rosen train. I thought that Rosen is the best pure thrower in this draft. You know,
I mean, you could certainly still be right. Yeah. Like, you know, Rosen looks the least likely, maybe 4th out of 5, just because Bradford could get hurt in a minute. But of the 5 guys to play, it looks like Darnold and maybe Allen will be starting.
Right.
And Mayfield has looked very good, but is going to be the backup. Rosen, it seems to be, you know, entrenched behind Bradford, and Lamar Jackson didn't appear to really be given a chance to play over Flacco, although he did beat out RG3 for what that's worth.
Yeah,
for the backup
right.
job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the troubling thing wasn't that you picked Barkley, I think. The troubling thing was what Gettleman, the GM, basically said in mocking the reporters afterwards, right? And basically saying, like, numbers are stupid.
Yeah. There was so much about it that, right, Gettleman's performance that night, beyond anything else, was even more troubling. On top of, I mean, you knew after with the decision he made, he already was not, you know, thinking like most other people, most of the more forward-thinking, you know, analytic-driven people were thinking. But then to go out afterwards and pull that really, you know, that old school fake typing on the keyboard, like, you know, you guys think you know something, you know, beep bop boop bop, whatever, you know, nerd, you know, trope you want to do, like, it was just such a joke. And you know, everything about this, even, you know, there are so many levels that this pick didn't make sense on, you know, beyond the construction of the roster and running, when you talk about running back value, taking one that high, you know, it's not just that you can find running backs later and all that stuff. It's, do you realize that Saquon Barkley is immediately like the 4th highest paid running back in the NFL? He's not taken one snap in his career, and he is one of the top paid players at his position in the whole league. Like, that's like old school paying Bradford and Stafford before they ever played a game. Like, the whole point of the change
is, right before the rookie contracts got you know, put under control. It's a great point. I think I think first of all, there's all Saquon Barkley would have to be like Le'Veon Bell to get another contract near the size he just got this one.
Right.
Like, I hope he doesn't spend this one, because this is the forever contract he just got.
Right, exactly.
Running backs don't get paid like that unless it's by accident, which is basically what happens when you get picked second as a running back
right.
in the draft.
Or if you're Jerick McKinnon or something silly like that.
Yeah, right. Or you could go to the Niners right. and just tell them you're a fullback and right. they'll pay you. But other than that, it doesn't really work out. It's a great point. It's one of the, and it works the other way also. Like having a quarterback under the rookie scale, now everyone's realizing like, oh, that's the way to do it. Like the Seahawks with Russell Wilson,
right.
the Ravens. You know, Flacco doesn't get paid till like literally like the day after the Super Bowl. Basically, he's like, pay me. That, you know, these guys are winning the title under rookie contracts because you can afford to pay a left tackle and a number one corner and a number one receiver if you could find one.
Right.
I mean, you guys have a number one receiver, but you don't have, you just had to pay a left tackle. So like at a certain point, and we could talk about this when we get into the actual team, like a lot of people are getting paid. So I am curious, like, are you about to enter salary cap hell? Like, how is this going to work? Because you're paying quarterback, you're paying a left tackle more than anybody. And then it's fitting that we're talking today because you just paid the wide receiver. He's already spent all of that money, but it's still in the last hour, but it still counts against the cap for the next 5 years, like as an average.
Right.
That money's gone.
Right, yeah.
Odell Beckham, where, like, I would love to be like a nice store nearest wherever Odell signed that contract. Because, like, I'm sure he bought Sterling Shepard like six figures worth of whatever Sterling Shepard likes today. And anyone else he was like partying with, like, they should at least make a show out of it because.
Yeah, well, did you see the video that he that Roger Lewis posted?
Yeah, it was great.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if they make content out of it, at least they could sort of monetize it.
That's
possibly.
True, yeah. Who knows?
Turn it into like a mini reality show.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting point. That's, yeah, people would watch that, no doubt.
I would love to be like a club inviting Odell Beckham tonight.
Right.
I think it would be, it would work. But I also like the idea, like, to be sincere for a second, like, these, you know, professional athletes sign these life-changing contracts, like money that we can't even dream about. So it's cool to see that they're like super stoked about it,
yeah.
And not like,
oh yeah, it's definitely
like I do
true.
Like the idea, like, yeah. Holy cow, I have like generational wealth.
Yeah, there's something that, very, you know, real about Odell Beckham, right?
Yeah.
And as you said, that generational wealth that may be spent tomorrow, but
oh yeah, the generation may be from today till tomorrow.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It might be one, like, he might just buy one yacht and then go on it in every bye week. Right. I mean, we're not sure.
Right. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. There is something extremely authentic about Beckham, other than the fact that he is obviously a generational talent. You know, it's very well deserved, and I'm thrilled that they paid him. You know, like you said, will they be entering salary cap hell? I don't know, only because Manning is making more than him, basically, well, probably the same amount as him at this point, and he's going to be, please God, off the books sometime very soon. And they'll replace him with, you know, probably some lower paid, whether it's someone on the roster or someone they draft next year. But eventually they will get to that point where they are going to be paying a quarterback very little. You know, I don't think they're going to go the Sam Bradford route of, you know, literally trading for Sam Bradford like every other team does. So I would imagine that.
And he's not cheap either. He's making $20
million. Oh, no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I don't think they're going to go trade for a $20 million a year guy or sign a $20 million a year guy. I think they'll probably start from scratch.
What if you keep Eli but pay him the veteran minimum?
I mean, at least he'll be only overpaid by a little bit then. So that's worth something,
yeah.
Right?
No, I don't. I think Eli is I don't think it works the other way. I don't think you could ever pay him less than he's making now.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about all this is that, yeah, no, it doesn't really. And Sam Bradford is the perfect example.
What's Eli's contract?
I think he has like one more year of guarantees after this one. I don't know what the exact. He's not making that much right now compared to other quarterbacks.
Okay.
It's probably around 20, a little over 20, maybe. That'd be my guess. I don't have it offhand.
You know, there's not a lot of like, we could talk about Eli all day, but you know, this podcast has discussed Eli ad nauseum. There's not a lot of great analysis we could say about Odell. I'm a pretty big Sterling Shepard guy. I think he's going to be a really big number two. I think he's definitely being undervalued in fantasy. Even people are afraid, like, oh, well, there's four options. Well, first of all, Evan Engram already has a concussion. And second of all, like, they pass the ball a lot. Like, look at Sterling Shepard when he was healthy. He gets a lot of targets.
Well,
he gets the ball thrown to him a lot, even when Odell's there.
But they didn't draft, you know, Saquon second overall to, you know, ignore him. So,
of course not.
It's
no,
hard
but
to
I
say.
Think there's enough. It's not like they have a superstar third receiver either. I think there's enough for those four guys to really spread it around. You might have a game where they are quiet, but I think cumulatively over the season, all four of those guys, if they're healthy, will put up big numbers.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I even think Eli is being slept on a tiny bit in fantasy league, as gross as that is to say, because I do think, especially if you're not in a Chester league where it's -3 for an interception.
Of course.
You
of
know,
course,
I'm in a league where it's -1. Like, who cares if Eli throws a pick?
I think we don't know that it's going to be -3 for interception yet. I think, doesn't Chester have to recalibrate all the stats from the last 10 years to decide what the actual number is going to be?
He's very, it's like his main philosophy in life is that interceptions friends.
Yes.
When we started the League of Leagues, like, I went over the rules with him and I fixed the rules, and then I noticed the next day that, like, he had switched -2 to -3. I'm like, well, we didn't agree on that. He's like, yeah, but it has to be. And I put it to vote, and it was like 9-1 against him. And he almost wanted to quit the league because we only give out -2 for interception.
9-1 against him. I would have still guessed it ended up being -3. So you're saying it didn't?
Oh, yeah. No, it might be. By the way, he might have, like, put in a code in the thing. Like, we might think that it's -2. But actually on ESPN, like, he also, a lot of times, like, he was so mad at ESPN, he created – this is not a joke. He created a league on Yahoo with everyone's teams just so he could follow it on Yahoo better than ESPN because he detests ESPN. That's a real thing that happened. And he also has charts for, like, what if this trade hadn't been made? Like, here are the actual league standings.
Right.
Amazingly, his Russell Westbrook for, like, a bag of balls. No offense, Morty, who's definitely listening because he's a Giants fan and traded in the bag of balls. Like, amazingly, he never made a chart for that. Like, his absolute, like, trade robbery that, like, I reported him to the FBI on Twitter for, and he should have been arrested. Like, he never made a chart for like what would have happened in the league had he not traded Russell Westbrook, because he wouldn't have won the NBA league. All right, nobody cares. The question I want to ask you about the offense is about the O-line.
Right.
Eric Flowers, you know, creates a lot of headlines for an anonymous right tackle. And then the left tackle is Nate Solder, who, I mean, the Patriots don't pay. Like, I'm always nervous when the other team doesn't want to pay a guy, but if it's the Patriots, it's different, right? Like, if it seems like, well, we could live without that person, it makes me scared. But one, you gave Nate Solder so much money.
Right.
And two, like, the Patriots are known for, like, all right, this is our price, we're not going past it. So, but Nate Solder was, it's not like Nate Solder was, like, the best left tackle in football, even though he's being paid like it. So talk to me about your thoughts on the O-line. You draft Will Hernandez. You have a couple sort of anonymous guys in Jalapio, Omama, I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah. But then you have the high-priced left tackle and sort of the Eric Flowers situation. Talk about the O-line.
So interestingly, the Giants actually traded their starting center from last year just over the weekend. I guess that was Brett Jones. They traded him to the Vikings. I don't know if that was some sort of a Shermer compensation thing. Just, we're going to trade away a decent O-line when we haven't had any for years. I don't know if he's shown so little in practice that was worthwhile, but I think they do want to start Jalapio in the middle, and they think John Greco is going to be a good enough backup. So I guess they didn't feel like they needed Jones. But basically, the thing with Solder is the thing with Flacco, who we discussed earlier for a minute, whose name came up. It's when a commodity comes to free agency at, you know, within his prime, that's very, very rare situation, and that person is just going to get paid, and that's what happens. And, you know, you just don't get left tackles that become available like that, and that's what happened. I mean, going to the offseason, it seemed like the Giants' number one target was the guard Noel, who signed in Jacksonville in the end, who was coming from Carolina, and he became the highest paid guard in the league. And then Solder immediately became the highest paid tackle in the league.
Yeah, it's weird. Certain positions, like, there's like 100 good safeties.
Right.
And we don't even need 100 good safeties. But there's not 5 times 32, you know, there's not 160 O-linemen that are competent. And so when especially at the premium positions like center and left tackle and right tackle, like, when one of these guys becomes available, like, there's never really a year where it's like, oh, these guys didn't get paid. They always get paid.
Right, exactly.
There aren't enough good O-linemen.
Right. The only situation, if you think about, like, was it last year where Whitworth became a free agent and the Rams got him? Which there's sort of an irony to that also, because that's the guy the Giants should have been going for last year instead of, I don't even remember what awful thing they spent their money on last year when they should have been spending it on him. Maybe it was paying up JPP. Yeah, it was probably it. They probably, instead of paying JPP, who they traded this offseason after 1 year, instead of doing something silly like that, if they would have just given the money to Whitworth last year, less money, of course, than Solder's getting now, and not only would last year probably have turned out differently, but, you know, they wouldn't have to go so far above and beyond in paying Solder now, and they could have used that money for something more reasonable. Like, this is the thing with franchises when they're in a funk, where one mistake, you know, turns into another. You're constantly trying to dig yourself out from the original mistake. And that kind of seems like the situation the Giants have been in for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years at this point.
It's very hard. I mean, you're a Mets fan, Yoni. And so you're a Mets Giants guy, right? And
yes.
Number one, that means you have like two teams that don't believe in statistics past 1977.
Yeah.
Like two teams that do not believe in sabermetrics. I don't know if you know about my sports intersectionality theory also, where you're not allowed to be Mets Giants or Jets Yankees anymore. Oh. It's over. The struggle of the Mets is the same as the struggle of the Jets, and you can't appreciate it.
Yeah, it actually is kind of rare. Mets-Jets is definitely more common. I think there's like that Long Island connection where the Jets practiced in Long Island and the Mets played in Long Island when we were growing up. So people from Long Island mm-hmm. generally became Mets-Jets people.
But there was also a lot of Queens. There was a lot of Queens-Jets fans because they played in the old school ones. The first day they played in Chase Stadium.
Yeah, that was for like what 2 years, 4 years. Like that was a
But that's when they started. They were playing Queens. That's why my grandfather and my father and ultimately I root for the Jets.
Right.
I want to talk about the defense, Yoni. So the pass rush is considered
If I could just go back to the O-line for a second.
To the O-line.
Yeah.
And talk about Will
you.
Hernandez. Give me your intake. Sort of like quick take about Will Hernandez also.
Oh, so there's a lot of excitement around him. You know, he's a mauler. Everyone talked about Gettleman likes his quote unquote hog mollies and just one of those road grading guards. Supposedly this is one of those guys, just mean streak. Like everyone talks about him like he's exactly what you want out of that position. If that's really the case, I'm not really sure why so many teams passed up on him at the end of the first round. But I, you know, from everything I've heard, I'm thrilled that he's on the Giants. I'm sure this year will probably be somewhat of a learning curve for him, but probably by next year he'll be up to speed. I think the offensive line this year is going to be bad, just like it was last year, you know, and the year before that.
Most teams that have bad O-lines have decided like not to put any resources into it. But you guys have put so many resources. You know, Eric Flowers, number one pick.
And they always have. That's the thing. Right. You know,
you pick a guard in the second round. That's a first-round pick, essentially, you know, because guards are rarely in the first round.
Right.
This
has always been going on, you know, before. Who just left the Giants? They just lost Justin Pugh, who was a first-round pick. They just lost Weston Richburg, who was a second-round pick, interior line, same idea like you were saying. Like, they've been investing draft capital, you know, up there for a long time, even if they weren't going to spend actual free agent money on it. And it's been a complete disaster. And, you know, that's the thing about last year. Everyone talks about how Ben McAdoo was a joke. You know, their offense was so predictable. Like, you know, all that stuff I'm sure is true. But the reality is their offensive line was terrible and they didn't have Beckham and they had no running game. So, like, you know, what was really going to happen? And did they make any changes that are really going to fix that? I mean, I get, of course, bringing in Shurmur is supposed to be very good with, you know, working with offensive lines that aren't great. Minnesota's wasn't supposed to be too great last year or the year before, although they did sign some higher profile guys like Riley Reiff in the last couple of years. So the hope is that a coach can make a difference there. But the reality is these guys are bad. Eli has no mobility. And even if the left side of the line, which is Will Hernandez and Nate Solder is good, you know, you still have Eric Flowers on the right. You have Patrick Omame, who's on his, I think, fourth team in 5 years. And John Jalapio, the center, another guy who's bounced around a bit. Like, you can't, offensive line is one of those things that's at times, you know, if you have more than one weak link, the whole thing's really going to fall apart. So I don't really see how the situation's going to be much different, you know, but hopefully Shurmur can do something with that. And then, you know, that'll prove whether or not Gettleman actually knew what he was doing with it, with all of this stuff. So, but for now, that's the reason that I'm so unconfident, is that their offensive line is just dreadful. And there's no reason to think it's going to be much better.
I will say, though, a lot of fans have come on and said the same thing. So I do wonder, like, someone has to have it can't just be that every defensive line is mauling every offensive line. Like,
the Cowboys
someone has
and
to have
Eagles.
A good offensive line.
The Cowboys
right,
and the
other
Eagles.
Than, other than Dallas and Philly. And Dallas's is tenuous at this point also because they've lost so many guys in the offseason.
Yeah.
Like, by the way, I think we, in general, talking about the NFC East for a second, like, we always widely overrate the Super Bowl winner. And, like, we should spend more time thinking about those last few weeks in December where the Eagles looked incompetent and less time thing about like where they move the ball at will against the Vikings and the Patriots.
Yeah.
But like, I do think it's insane to just pick a team to repeat, you know, it's one thing to pick the Patriots, but again, they haven't done it since,
yeah.
for now for it's 15 right. years. But that being said, like that team, it, like that team is really good. Like they do have like the last good O line, and everyone could get hurt, and they have like they have pass rushers coming out of their ears. We did an Eagles podcast the other day. I mean, they have guys who are backups who'd be the best pass rusher on certain teams.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I actually think the Eagles are part of it also is they still have the young QB who they're not paying a lot of money to, so they're able to allocate their resources around the roster. But this Eagles team actually reminds me a lot of the 07 Giants. There's so many similarities. Where those, and if you remember, the 07 Giants going into 08 were the best team in the league. And then, you know, Plaxico shot himself in the leg and the rest is history. But the Giants in 08 were way better than the Giants were in 07. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, the two Super Bowl Giants teams were, I mean, the second one was abominable. The second one was the eighth best team in the conference.
Well.
And the first one was fine. I mean, listen, they played the Patriots, you know.
Yeah,
they gave the Patriots their two best games of the year.
Without rehashing that, because obviously I have some differences of opinion, but the Eagles, if you look at the way that team was built, you know, good off.
You think the second Giants Super Bowl team was competent?
Do I think that they were competent? I can tell you when they made the playoffs started and they drew Atlanta with their first game, I'm like, I would put money down right now on them winning the
24-2 game. Yeah, I mean, but you had seen it before. Listen.
I think they were clicking at the right time. I think they had good matchups coming into that offseason. And the 07 team, I didn't think had a chance. The 07 team, going into that, I was like, okay, this is not going to be pretty, despite some of my friends who actually bet Giants money line and rolled the money over every single game, even into the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Came out way ahead.
Yeah.
But that team I did not have any confidence in. But the 2011 team,
I went to a Giants fan Super Bowl party, not even considering like, oh, they're gonna have like a pile on if they win, and it's gonna be awful to be here because I didn't think it was even like an option. And then it happened, and I was like, oh my, I can't believe I did this. I can't believe I came. Like,
well, you were damned if you do.
Here.
I mean,
this is like a Giants
damned if you do,
party.
Damned if you don't. I mean, would you be happy if the Patriots won? I mean, either way, it's at least you didn't have to watch Patriots fans celebrate. I guess,
no.
But you probably should have just watched that from a bunker or something like that.
Yeah, by the way, speaking of the 2011 season, so the Giants were famously outscored by 6 points that year when they won the Super Bowl, which is crazy. But people forget the Tebow Broncos that made the playoffs when that whole division was 8-8, except I think the Chiefs were 7-9, were outscored by 94 points, the Tebow Broncos. And they won a playoff game. I mean, that's impossible. We need Chester.
I mean, unless God's on your side, obviously, so.
Yeah, but I don't. He wasn't on their side when they lost 45-13.
Yeah, you know, open miracles, hidden miracles. You know, you can't be too obvious. But if you can see that with that game against the Steelers, I don't know what to tell you.
Demaryius Thomas kind of still tracing that play, if you think about it. Like he hasn't been that good since. Anyway,
yes.
Let's talk about the defense. I have to issue an apology. I don't know if I said this to you, if I said this maybe to one of the other Giants fans, Josh Berliner, or somebody else who came on and talked Giants. And I said, like, the Harrison signing was really stupid because he's, like, an older, out-of-shape guy who was really mostly a product of the Jets, at the time, incredible Sons of Anarchy defensive line with Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and Leonard Williams after him. When he would come out of the game, like whoever his backup was like the number two guy in the league in Pro Football Focus run defense, and he was number one. And I thought he was completely a product of his environment, and it would be a disastrous signing. And there was definitely data to back that up. But then he's come to the Giants and somehow been better. And basically brought your run defense to, like, kind of the best thing you guys do. And he's getting older, and he's still, like, I think Pro Football Focus had him as, like, the 30-something best player in the league last year, which is crazy for a guy who probably doesn't play that many snaps compared to, like, most elite defensive linemen. Mea culpa. I was definitely wrong on Snacks Harrison.
Yeah, he's really interesting, and he's really been, like, the heart of the defense in a lot of ways. Like, between him and Collins, like, they've really been the heart of the defense, And he really brings a toughness, and he brings a work ethic, even after getting paid, that, like, you know, that's a big part of things, too. You never know how a guy's going to be after they get that contract, and, like, he has never taken his foot off.
And he's still only 29. He just looks like he's 40.
Yeah.
Like, and feels like he's been around a while. He's not 30 yet. And the truth is, when no one's aging well in the NFL other than quarterbacks, like, defensive linemen sort of are. Like, certain positions are aging so incredibly poorly, but the big, fat D linemen, you know, think about the Washingtons. Like, these guys kind of age decently compared to other positions.
Yeah, especially given their body types, it does seem like they're.
I guess strength doesn't go the way speed does. I'm just making that up, but that seems accurate.
Yeah, I have no idea. But like you said, their run defense is probably the best thing about this team, other than, I guess, the athleticism on offense, which
maybe the running offense might end up being the best thing about this team.
Yeah, I mean between Beckham and Barkley and they have so many guys to throw the ball to when they can actually get the ball thrown, that might be interesting. Mm-hmm. But I think their run defense is actually going to be incredible. I think their front seven is really, really strong against the run. The second round pick last year, Dalvin Tomlinson, had a really nice year, and he's going into year two now. They drafted a guy in the third round, this guy BJ Hill, who I believe they took with a pick that they traded JPP for. And he's gotten rave reviews in camp also. So that front three is looking really, really strong, at least against the run, of course. Between Vernon on the outside, who unfortunately hurt his ankle in practice yesterday, and no one really knows what the deal with him is going to be, but
yeah, he might miss. It looks like he might miss opening day at this point.
Yeah, you don't really. I mean, even just him being banged up a little isn't ideal. That's happened to him the last couple of years. These small injuries have really derailed him. But mm-hmm. a healthy Olivier Vernon, around the league, it probably doesn't look so great because he hasn't been putting up those gaudy numbers, and especially hasn't been living up to the contract, most would say. But watching him on a week-to-week basis is extremely enjoyable. He's a really, really good player. And if he was actually healthy this year, I could have for sure seen, 15 sacks as a possibility in this James Betcher defense.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the secondary. So Collins is a star. Janoris Jenkins is a really good player. I think the Eric Flowers of the situation on the defense is Eli Apple, right?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, a very, very comparable situation. A guy who was overdrafted, who part of the reason they took him is because he was physically gifted and extremely young for the draft class, and they figured he'd grow into whatever he'd become, and also has just really not happened and has not looked good so far. He's still
very young. His mom has gotten more attention than he has.
Well, early on, we thought that it was going to be a big issue because she was this quasi-celebrity within his career and within the draft process and all that stuff. But I haven't really heard much about her since he's been bad, which is kind of a good sign if you think about it. You don't want, at least she's not overshadowing him, and you could kind of look at it that's a distraction and that's why he's having these issues. No, his issues are all mm-hmm. his own. He's really has not been that good. He's got.
Can I break in with the 32 fans? There's a 32 team NFL draft going on with some of the listeners and Chester and myself. Can I break in with the latest pick because it put a smile on my face?
Go for it.
The latest pick was Matt Schaub.
Wow.
Everyone needs you need to back up your QB in a 32 team league because
your backup?
You probably need the third string.
Is he on the Raiders now? Where is he?
I can say this because I hopefully Chester won't put this out in the next couple of days. No, he's the backup to Matt Ryan.
Oh, okay.
We have Marcus Mariota, and you know who the backup to Mariota is? It's Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, really?
And
they
just picked a sixth or seventh rounder who's giving Gabbert a little bit. I think Gabbert will get the gig, we have to draft this third stringer. Also, I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Right.
I'm not sure if we're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to draft Blaine Gabbert at some point during the draft. I don't know if anyone's going to vulture a Gabbert from us if we need to. But Mariota never plays 16 games, so we actually kind of need him. I don't know what we should do.
Yeah, Gabbert's also one of those guys who has looked worse in practice, and somehow he gets to a game and is actually pretty decent.
He's not as bad as people think. No. He's really not.
No. Also a type of guy who was drafted too high, and then that sort of set him behind.
Right. If he was a fourth round pick and just sat for a bunch of years, he'd probably still be in the league. And be
exactly.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. So anything else? So you think Apple ends up being a league average player ever or no?
I think he has a chance. He's still very young. They accepted him back after all the craziness last year in the locker room. And the fact that he came back and is supposedly playing hard definitely bodes well for him. He's still young. Hopefully something will come of that. I'm being very optimistic here. I'm not really sure. But even beyond Apple, nowadays you need 3-4 cornerbacks just to survive, and they don't have others. Dante Dion and Sky Johnson, who's messed up a couple of preseason games. I forgot his first name. They have a few interesting guys out there who in practice seem interesting, but I think the secondary, like you said, Sox had the superstar in Collins. And I think Jenkins also is a star. I think that, you know, last year he was a little bit unmotivated because of all the issues in the locker room. But I think when he's motivated, he's a top 10 cover corner in the league for sure. But, you know, again, like the offensive line, if you have two guys who are good and two guys who are dreadful, you know, you're still going to be in bad shape. That doesn't help you at all. And I think that that's basically the position they're in, where they were hoping that, you know, the safety situation would have worked out a little bit better. They have the kid Thompson from Boise State, who they drafted a couple of years ago, who hasn't shown anything, can't stay healthy. You know, maybe Andrew Adams from UConn will step up. You know, they're trying to, I think they're trying to get William Gay to play safety right now a little bit. Like they, you know, they're really, you know, at the bottom of the barrel here, trying to fill out the rest of their secondary past those top two guys. That's definitely a concern. And then the other thing, which has just killed the Giants for years now, has been covering tight ends. And when they traded for Alec Ogletree, people thought that that was going to be, you know, hopefully that'll be the guy who is finally able to break this issue that they had. Jason Witten retired, but even with Witten retired, you know, they still have Ertz and other guys in the division, Jordan Reed. You know, we need someone who can guard these tight ends, and it just hasn't happened until this point. And
I guess the good news is you did mention Ertz being in the division and Reed, but I think Reed is done.
Yeah,
he couldn't stay healthy last year. But there just aren't a lot of. Maybe you're in a decent tight end division, but there aren't a lot. But you also have one of them. It would probably be worse to be a Cowboys defender.
If you're a Giants fan, you know when you play the Giants, you are a good tight end. That's how bad the coverage has been. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, like OJ Howard in like the third game of the season last year had 100 yards against them because like they just cannot cover the position. And Alec Ogletree has looked terrible in the preseason so far. Being embarrassed by the Lions and the Browns. Not sure what happened in the Jets game, if there were any issues there. I didn't have a chance to watch that. I don't know if you did.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
The preseason game? No.
Yeah. So I don't want to take too much from the preseason, but like that has not been good to this point. And if they can't guard tight ends, that's, you know, once again, just opens things up for trouble like they've had for years now. So to sum up, I guess I'm very encouraged by what the run defense is going to be this year. Pass defense, they're really going to have to scheme. I mean, James Betcher has supposedly been a very good defensive coordinator with the Cardinals, and people were excited about him coming over. He's really going to have to scheme around half a secondary, which is terrible, and linebackers who can't cover tight ends again. So hopefully he'll be able to do that. And if he can, this defense has a chance to be very good. Time will tell.
All right, let's play the roster game quickly. Pick a number, but do you know how this works? Pick a number between 0 and 100, and I'm gonna pick a guy on the New York Giants roster, and you're going to have to tell me everything you know about this person.
I'll go random. I'll go 75.
75. All right. Who's Ray-Ray Armstrong?
Oh, Ray-Ray Armstrong. He's a linebacker. He was on San Francisco or Washington last year, maybe. He actually has a chance.
San Fran, yeah.
He actually has a chance to play if Ogletree is a guy who can't guard – if Ogletree can't guard tight ends, they're hoping that he's a guy who has the athleticism to be able to do that. So he actually has a chance to play a bit this year if things aren't looking good for other guys. So, I actually know who that is. All right.
I also like the Chris Lewis Harris because he has three first names.
Nice. Yeah, there's a few guys with some interesting names on the roster. With Etatue, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, but one of the wide receivers. Amba Etatue. And, some other guys here with interesting names.
Okay. Sam from New Zealand is a listener who wants to follow a football team this year. He's never had a favorite team before. And every guest that comes on pitches their team as to be the one he should root for. You could say, like, maybe this is not for you. So you have the, I think, tough task of trying to convince this listener, Sam from New Zealand, that he should start becoming a New York Football Giants fan in the year 2018.
Oh, well, that's actually really easy. The Giants have a ton to sell. If you don't care about like wins and losses necessarily, there's no more exciting team than the Giants. That's for sure. I mean, Odell Beckham is the most exciting player in the NFL, bar none.
Saquon might end up being high up there, who knows, very quickly.
Exactly. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of jerseys. If you're going to see a jersey around New Zealand, there's a good chance it could be Odell Beckham. So that's not a bad one to have in that regard. So, I think that makes it a pretty easy sell. You get basically the coolest player in the NFL as far as the youths these days probably see things.
Yeah, and Saquon seems really, really likable also. Yeah. I think if he ends up having a big first year, I do think he's going to get a lot of PR and become one of the faces of the league.
Yeah, well, Odell Beckham should be pretty likable too, but the New York media is doing everything they can to make sure that's not the case.
They've had a tough time, and he's an interesting guy. He's weird in that he's like a real millennial. Like, he, in a weird way, is very relatable. I think he is, well, you know, and talking about the Dancing with the Money video before, like, I think he is a pretty normal person who just happens to be like a football star. But for whatever reason, he's painted as like a complicated person, whereas Saquon is just like a very down to earth, like have a beer with type of guy. Whereas Odell's a little bit more party-ish, and the media has jumped on him, and for some reason, I think they're gonna Saquon's gonna be the good guy and Odell's gonna be the bad guy. That's how I think
that'll be interesting to see.
If Saquon's good. If he's bad, then the fires of hell will fall on Saquon.
Yeah, I don't really see that.
And on Dave Gettleman.
I mean, being bad is almost not even on the table for Barkley at this point.
It's very hard. Now you're making an argument where, like, there are very few players you could say that about in the last like 10 drafts. Like, it would be stunning if he was bad. It would really be shocking.
Right. I mean,
it wouldn't be shocking if Sam Darnold was bad.
Right.
It wouldn't be shocking at all if Baker Mayfield was bad.
I mean, Trent Richardson.
I don't think they're going to be.
You have guys who people thought were going to be the next thing just like that. And we have ample evidence that that doesn't really mean much. But yeah, it would be pretty surprising if he, if he wasn't at least
average.
Who's
the best running back prospect this century? I think Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
When Adrian Peterson was in like eighth grade, like everyone on earth knew he would be in the NFL.
Right.
He was essentially untackleable in college. I mean, go back. My favorite football game of all time is the Oklahoma Boise State,
of course,
game.
Yeah.
And I happened to just be watching that as like a degenerate watching like the one of the minor BCS games in like a pre-championship era. And I remember thinking, like, oh, this is like a waste of my time. And they're up 34-14. But even when Boise State comes back, like, they score a touchdown. And then Peterson, the next play, is like, oh, I'm going to score a touchdown. And just runs first play, goes 25 yards in the overtime and scores.
Yeah,
like,
it's actually.
Pete will forget now because he's kind of a joke. Peterson just said today, he said, what's your goal? And he's like, I don't know, just continue to be the best player in the NFL. And he said with a straight face, like, he honestly believes he's still the best player in the NFL. He must have been very confused why he was out of the league the last few months.
No doubt.
We will forget now, and maybe we'll remember when he's in the Hall of Fame, like, how incredibly good Peterson was. Like, he was definitely, in this running back era that's not been super impressive, like, he was definitely the best guy. I think Richardson, obviously, it was a shock that he was this bad. But I don't think he was as sure of a thing as Saquon Barkley. I'm not sure.
Yeah, probably not. And I mean, also just comparing Barkley in college to Richardson in college, you know, the athleticism of players has changed a bit even over the last just 10 or
And also, who's
like,
blocking
years.
for Trent Richardson? Five guys who are probably like all starting the NFL now also.
Right, right. Also true. But, you know, he had that physique that was just like, you know, how could this guy, like you said, who could have tackled him? Like, it made no sense. Like, he's, you know, other than his own guy when he runs into the back of him, I guess. But
yeah. All right. So last thing we do, I don't know if you pitched, it's a good pitch, but I think a team that's recently won two Super Bowls is a very tough pitch for a new fan.
Yeah.
To
yeah. No,
sort of
the Giants are very, Giants are very unlikable.
Can you really, with a straight
face,
tell someone as a Met fan, you're really going to tell someone with a straight face, they should root for the Giants over the Jets in 2018?
Oh, over the Jets? What? Oh, you're saying going forward, for 2018 going forward.
Yeah, going forward, going
Jets.
Forward. Like, to
I,
be
I,
part
look,
of, like,
here,
potentially
I don't,
something
I don't
special.
Know.
The
look,
Jets
you
will
guys,
mess it up, but, like,
you guys finally get a quarterback, and you think that, like, that means something, like, you guys, you know, are suddenly poised for the future or something like that. I don't know, but, you know, all you have to do is look at a little bit of history to see that this is not probably not going to end well for the Jets. No disrespect, just, you know.
No, listen, and I've said this 10 times now in the podcast, but Darnold could end up being great. You know who's great? Matt Stafford's great. And, like, that team never wins any games. So, you know, you also
Yeah, no, I'm kidding about that. I'm sure the Jets at least definitely have something to be excited about, possibly more than the Giants. I'm not really sure. You know, having a guy – I mean, getting Saquon is exciting. You know, Beckham is exciting. And eventually they'll get their quarterback. I don't know – when or how. Maybe it's someone on the roster, maybe it's Letta, maybe it's Davis Webb, probably not Davis Webb, but, you know, when they do, at least they have the pieces around him for it to work. So that there is something to be said about that. But no, I think that the Giants sort of have a bit of unlikableness, mostly because of the luck that was involved in their two Super Bowls. For sure, the perceived luck. I think that gives them a really bad rep amongst like the newer age football fans, and maybe that's why we feel a lot of people like us feel the way that we do. You know, whether it's Chester or you, and you know the Football Outsider, the people who pay attention to like the new stats, the Football Outsiders, Pro Football Focus. Like the Giants look really bad for those two Super Bowls because you know no one wants to give them credit for those, and they got lucky, and there's like this disappointment amongst the stats community because it makes them look bad. That they can't.
I think stat people, and I would put myself in this. Like you want the best team to win. Like historically, it's like, oh yeah, like it doesn't make sense that the 07 Giants won, and it certainly doesn't make sense that the 11 Giants won. I mean, the thing about the 11 Giants, I was just like going through some of those old games a couple weeks ago. Like the Packers are incredible that season. Their defense wasn't incredible, but their offense was just like ludicrously good. But you guys smoked them. People mix up like the Favre game in 07 with just annihilating the Rodgers team. I think it was 37-20.
Yeah, awesome.
You had
in that
won
game,
by 22 the round before. Who was awesome?
Yeah, the really sad thing, the guy who was awesome in that Packers game was Hakeem Nicks. And him not working out was so disappointing.
I mean, he worked out. He just his career was a little short. Yeah, I mean, he got Nicks that. Was a really great player.
Yeah, after that Super Bowl, someone was sending around like a list of jerseys with a Super Bowl patch on it for people to buy. And I was like, I definitely want to get in on that. And I looked over the list and I'm like, you know, Manning, Cruz. I was going to do Manning. It's too obvious. But like Cruz, JPP,
Cruz
Nicks.
And Nicks.
I'm like,
who's
going to be the guy who's most likely to be on the team and still a superstar in 5 years from now? And in my mind, I was like, oh, there's no question that it's Hakeem Nicks.
So you bought a Knicks jersey?
Oh, I have the white Hakeem Nicks jersey with the Super Bowl patch that is somewhere in the closet.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go anywhere and succeed, so I think, like, it's okay to wear to a Giants game still. You know, he has the Super Bowl win.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would wear a jersey to a game. I think that's, I don't know, a little weird.
But, and by the way, the interesting thing, I don't know why we keep talking about the 2011 season. The two best teams that year were probably the two teams that lost in the conference championship game. Because the Patriots had nothing left. They were, you know, they're just throwing to like Ocho Cinco and Gronk's corpse and Aaron Hernandez's pre-corpse.
Yeah, I know.
But like they just didn't have their team, and Welker wasn't even 100%.
Right. And
but
little known
you look
thing
at the
about
teams
that
who
Super
lost,
Bowl.
The Harbaugh teams, right? The Niners and the Ravens, who both lose close conference championship games, and then the next year are the Super Bowl. Those are probably ultimately the two best teams.
Yeah,
that
that's definitely it's definitely possible that was the case. A little known thing about the Super Bowl, little noticed thing I should say, is in the second quarter, I think it was, the Giants were up 10-3, and they were driving. Yeah. And
was it a 10-2 or where's the? Oh no, they scored
it,
two.
Oh
no,
it was 9-3, right? 9-3.
9-3. Yeah,
because they had the two.
Safety.
And they were moving the ball down at will. I think it was either their second or third drive. And Brandon Jacobs comes down the middle and busts through for like a huge run, like 15 or 20 yards. And Vince Wilfork pretends to get held on the play, and they call the holding, and it goes all the way back, and they end up losing out on the drive.
This is the segment that's called Giants Fan Complaining Somehow.
No. This
Giants
is, so Patriots so Super if Bowls. You watch the if you watch the NFL, what do they call the thing afterwards with the people talking? Vince Wilfork.
The thing with the people talking.
You know, where you hear everyone talking on the field.
Does he admit that he faked it?
Yeah, he admits that he faked it. And like
that's
that was
tough.
A huge
wow. Patriots got a call. That's never happened.
Yeah, it was a huge turning point in the game where like it would have been 16-3 easy, and like and then the Patriots came down and scored, and it actually made it a closer.
People also
game
were like Bradshaw was so good back then. Also, Amon Bradshaw was really
awesome.
Like never
awesome.
Never really had that one year where like people realized he was special, but he was such a good player.
Yeah, so I actually
Jacobs was overrated, and Bradshaw was underrated.
So I have a story about Amon Bradshaw. My cousin got married in the hotel the Giants were staying in on the night of a Giants Eagles game in Philly. So I found out that the Eagles, we were there for like family pictures, and we found out that the Giants were staying on floors like 9 and 10 or something. So I go down to the ninth floor, and I just like come out of the elevator, and I'm just sort of like standing there like an idiot. I'm like, what am I going to say
security?
If I see someone? This is like, no, there was no one there. I'm like, this is pathetic. Okay. It was like the 8 o'clock game, and it was like 1 in the afternoon or something. And I'm like, it's pathetic. I don't know what I'm going to do if I even saw someone. And way down the hallway, I see this, I shouldn't say way down, maybe it was like 20 or 30 feet from me. I see this guy standing right outside the door. And this guy is like huge. He is like built. And from afar, I couldn't tell how tall he really was, especially with nobody standing next to him. But he was like so ripped. And I look up and I'm like, are you Justin Tuck? And he like shakes his head. And I'm like, oh, I'm such a Justin Tuck is 6'5", you know, 260 pounds. And I look, I'm like, wait a sec, you're Ahmad Bradshaw. And he like shakes his head. Ahmad Bradshaw was 5'9". But he was so built like
taller than him,
that like you, I couldn't even imagine. I couldn't even imagine that he was not that he was so that's who that was. And I went over and I shook his hand and he gave me the toughest handshake I've ever felt in my life. And he was standing outside a door with the door open, and Brandon Jacobs was lying on the bed in the room. They were like playing video games. And Brandon Jacobs was significantly larger than the bed itself, than like the king size bed in the room. He was well bigger than the bed. But that is my
Bradshaw. You look kind of Bradshaw was listed at 5'10", 216, which is like interesting.
Yeah. Oh no, I was for sure, I was for sure taller than him, and I'm only 5'9". So, but yeah, that he was a really really good player. Great great blocker. Good pass catcher. He was a really really good player.
All right. So let's end this. The Giants' win total is 7. Do you have them going over, under, or is it's an even number? So sometimes those are hard to bet. Also,
yeah. So the Giants' schedule in the first half of the season is brutal, and because of that, so the question is going to be.
Let me read that quickly. So hosting Jacksonville, which is a really tough week one, because you lose that home opener, you're in Texas for 2 straight games in Dallas and Houston. Right. Hosting New Orleans in Carolina, hosting Philly at Atlanta. So the first 7 games are vicious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if they can pull out maybe 1 or 2 of those games, that'd probably be what you'd expect. Like, they'll probably be favored. You know, depending on how they look in the first game or two with the offensive line and stuff and how Eli looks, they may only be favored in, like, 1 of those games or 2 of those games. And you know, if they end up going starting off 2-5, you know.
Yeah, well, do you know the week 1 line?
I don't know.
Because, yeah, I don't know which of these games you'd actually be favored in right now.
Exactly.
I don't think any.
No. Right, so.
You'd probably be, I'm going to say, in Houston, you're not. In Dallas, there's no way. Jacksonville might not be a massive favorite in New York, but.
Right, and isn't Ramsey
you're probably the underdog
one,
in your first 7 games. And then, by the way, you're definitely a favorite at home to the Redskins. You're definitely a favorite at home to Tampa. You're definitely a favorite at home to Chicago and Tennessee and then Dallas. So.
Right.
Those are probably 5 easiest games.
Right. So the question is, though, if they start out the season 1-6 or 2-5, like, how do they, you know, pick up from there? So can they bounce back? Can they end up going, you know, 7-9, 8-8? Maybe. You know, depends on health. It depends on a lot of stuff. But looking at it at this point, it's hard to imagine that they're going to emerge from the first half of the season with more than 2 wins. So. 7 is probably a stretch. At the same time, look, if the offensive line can coalesce in any way and they can give Eli time, the offense could be incredible. So it's they're a little bit of a crapshoot here. If I had to pick one side or the other, I'd probably pick the under on 7.
By the way, there are 24th ranked team. I don't know why I said you said I was high on them. Maybe I don't remember what it said. But I had them 27th. Chester had them 21. Overall, we're 24.
Oh, it's funny.
Listen, I don't think this is a terrible team because I don't think it's a fun team to have to play because of the offensive weapons.
Right.
So they're not really in that bottom tier, but I don't know what the ceiling for a team with Eli Manning in 2018 is. And Eli Manning behind the bad O-line.
Right,
sure.
That's really what this all comes down to is that, right, Eli behind the bad O-line, he's going to have 2 seconds to
now,
throw.
Now, what if Will Hernandez ends up being like a Pro Bowler in his rookie season, like, the line all of a sudden, like, we're like, well, we have Hernandez and, well, we have Solder and, well, like, Eric Flowers isn't the worst right tackle in the league. Like, who knows?
Really? Why? You're sure about that?
I mean, they have to have seen something to get rid of, you know, they had Hughes gone.
What did they had John Hart there?
Richburg's
last year.
Gone. And now you trade the guy. Like, they have to see something on the interior offensive line to be willing to get rid of the, like, semi competent guys that they did.
I'm not sure why. We're making that assumption. Dave Gettleman, maybe he punched into his fake keyboard and it popped out.
Yeah, but listen, if Gettleman just literally is like senile and doesn't know what he's doing, like this team is barely worth discussing because they're just going to suck until they get rid of him in a couple of years.
I don't think that's the case. I don't think he's senile or anything like that. I just think that he's a little bit old school and, you know, that just wasn't a good look. But you know, it just goes to show that, and this is the problem with Reese also, is that these guys are great talent evaluators, but they just don't understand how to work the salary cap, how important that is in the modern NFL. And it's huge. And you can't be throwing money. I mean,
the Giants are a stars and scrubs team right now.
Right. Exactly. You can't build in the NFL that way. It's just not possible. So
well, we'll see.
Exactly. Time will tell. And if, you know, I don't know. I don't even know how they Yeah, how they decided that Gettleman was the guy, and how you can go into a room. I honestly think that. And
the only thing like everyone knew about Gettleman, I mean, he's pretty good in the draft in Carolina, right? They found a lot of interesting talent,
especially late.
He's a good drafter, but in terms of free agency, like his big thing was were the D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart signings, which were laughed at the time, and now look prehistoric. So it's it makes you wonder if, like, someone else should sort of be handling he's the number two,
right,
if he's, like, the talent evaluator draft guy and not
the guy. This is the scary thing about
the
Giants. It tells you that it comes from the top. This is John Mara. He's the one who had Reese. He's the one who brought in Gettleman now. Like, these are guys who seem to definitely know the game. You can wow people with your scouting ability. And they both have made some really nice, you know, scouting picks. They've found guys that were, you know, diamonds in the rough, no doubt. But ultimately, if you don't know how to spend money with the salary cap, you can find all the diamonds in the rough you want. But if you're spending $25 million a year on just the position of running back in 2018, or for this year, they're probably spending $10 million, $12 million. I don't know what it is. Whatever it is, it's way too much. And if that's what you're going to do, then you're throwing away all the savings that you have with all the good picks you make. And, you know, your team ends up not so great. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think we're good here. I feel like we've all learned a lot about the Giants. I'm glad you come on. Oh, I didn't realize this has gone so long. This is probably one of the longer ones. People have been asking, said 32 fans should be 32 minutes, which I agree, and I've kept the last few short, but this is going to be closer to an hour. All right, Yoni, do you have anything to plug? Where can people find you?
Oh, gosh, don't look for me anywhere. I have nothing to...
Don't look for him. He's not there.
Yeah, I don't want anyone going back on my... I don't want anyone going back my Twitter feed and finding things I said about who knows what. I'd rather just
You should delete your tweets.
Yeah,
you should delete your tweets. I went through all my 4,400 tweets. Like, none of them were offensive because, again, Born Woke and Plus.
Of course.
Like, they were all funny, and they should have had more retweets and likes. But I don't.
Right, I have no followers.
Everyone should go through them, especially if you're ever going to be like in the work. If you're not, unless you're like self-employed, you should probably go back.
So I actually, after the more recent thing broke, I actually did go back and delete one tweet, which really wasn't controversial. It was the only time I've ever tried to make a joke on Twitter, and it was about LaGuardia Airport.
First mistake.
So I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna delete that tweet and. That was that. That's the so I sort of did that, but unfortunately I don't have anything to plug at the moment. Certainly not in the sports world. If anyone wants, I can plug my real life outside of that. Although I don't think anyone's still gonna be listening.
Do you still do that NL only MLB league that I used to be in?
I do. Yeah, we're looking for serious players and if people who are very serious.
Oh no, I don't want
MLB,
you to plug your fantasy league.
I
was
especially
sort of
people
asking that.
Who like rules. If the most important thing to you about fantasy is a lot of rules, you're gonna love this league. But if you like baseball, less so.
I hate CBS Sportsline. I hate everything about CBS Sportsline.
Yeah, the thing about Sportsline is they give you the most customizability. So, like, ESPN...
You have to pay for
it. You like, Yahoo, if you miss the deadline of a start of a week, like, that's it. It doesn't matter how much you're paying for the league. Like, oh, there was a problem with the computer. And
no, ESPN, you could fix it. Yahoo is trick. Yahoo has no customization.
No, it's terrible. ESPN's actually pretty good. I kind of like
Yahoo,
ESPN.
We've had drafts. This is... Yahoo... You can own. Let's say like someone's late. Let's say you're doing an online draft, and one of your friends is like, "I'm stuck at work in traffic. Like coming home from work in traffic. I just need 20 minutes." In Yahoo, you can literally only pause like a couple times, and then you can't pause anymore, which seems like the most solvable problem in the world that they haven't fixed. So we had a draft basically collapse because someone wasn't there yet. And then, like, they were just getting, you know, like, let's say, like, Marquise. Like, the people were just, like, bidding up injured players to them. It was a mess. And so the draft dies, and it was the last night before the season. And I knew from the night before, because I had a similar issue on a Yahoo Fantasy Football draft, that I pulled the Chester and had created a
league
on ESPN. Because I'd asked them, not a parallel league, but I'd created just a, here's when the auction is. It's like a half hour after let's say the auction was at 8:30. Like, here's a 9 o'clock auction on ESPN. And then... when it crashed at like 8:42, I'm like, all right, if everyone can accept my ESPN invite in the next 12 minutes, we can just do the auction on ESPN. And it worked. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, you created a backup? I'm like, yeah, I created a backup. All 12 people got in like probably 30 seconds under the wire. And we've used that same like fake, the league's still on Yahoo. And we've used the same ESPN auction. We use them for drafting. for like 11 or 12 years now, like this emergency league.
That's so why don't you just move the league over at that point? What's the point of keeping Yahoo?
People don't like ESPN. They really don't like ESPN. I like it, but they're
the one thing I love. ESPN has a great app. Their app is really good, way better than Yahoo. So that I like about ESPN. But other than that, yeah, it's all, you know, we should be better at this. That's the truth. Multi-billion-dollar industry. Yeah,
and you know what I've noticed also? This might be very boring to people, and they feel free to shut it off because this podcast is basically over.
We'll play the music over.
None of these sites are putting any more money into fantasy. They're not, certainly not on mobile, but like, I mean, certainly not on web, but like the mobile, they're just making it like user-friendly on the app, but they're not adding things. So any, like, Chester's noticed a bunch of like little things that are easily fixable, and I'm sure there were problems 10 years ago, and they're just never going to get fixed. So whatever they have now, whatever software they have, whatever options they have, will never be improved on, which is kind of depressing.
So you think they just gave up?
The 32 fans league.
Are they putting all their money into like sports gambling? Like sports gambling is the next
frontier. I have no idea. It should be more. I don't know why they're. But the 32 fans league isn't on ESPN or Yahoo because none of these, even CBS Sportsline for money doesn't allow 32 teams in the league. So we had to do it on some.
Like fan tracks or something like that.
Yeah, some sort of website, which I don't. It might be a mess. I don't know because like they're not going to have like the UX of a an ESPN. Anyway, this has been boring fantasy talk.
Yeah.
If you want more of this, you could talk to us offline.
You could call me. My Twitter is for.
Oh yeah.
If you want to
give your phone number?
You could have that.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Listening. I don't know when this is going to be posted because we have a bunch of episodes in the queue. But hopefully late enough that people don't steal Blaine Gabbert from us in the 32-team draft. Anyway, everyone, see you tomorrow. Have a good day. Bye.